Strong, and this is VOA One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and Brian Lynn. Later, John Russell and Ashley will bring us our series on America's national parks. But first, a South Korean court on Wednesday rejected a claim by victims of Japanese wartime sexual slavery and their relatives. The group was seeking payment from Japan's government. The Seoul Central District Court said its decision was based on rules of international law that give countries protection from the authority of foreign courts. Japan says all wartime payment issues were settled under a 1965 treaty that provided $500 million in economic aid to South Korea. Activists representing sexual slavery victims said in a statement that the claimants would appeal the decision. They also said that the court had ignored their struggle to restore the victims' honor and self-respect. Katsunobu Kabo is Japan's chief cabinet secretary. He noted the decision conflicted with a January ruling in a separate case that found the Japanese government responsible for paying sexual slavery victims. In that case, the court called for Japan's government to give 100 million won, about $89,000 each, to a group of 12 women. Kato said he would not comment on the new ruling before examining the details more closely. But he said that Japan's position on the sexual slavery issue remains unchanged. He said the earlier court ruling violated international law and was unacceptable. Japan continues to strongly ask South Korea to take appropriate steps in order to correct the state of international violation, he said. The court in Seoul said international law and earlier rulings from South Korea's Supreme Court make it clear that foreign governments should be protected from civil legal cases in respect of their sovereignty. The court also noted that the countries never officially withdrew from a 2015 agreement that attempted to settle their dispute over the issue. Some Korean victims accepted payments from a Japanese-supported organization created by the deal. This shows it is possible for the countries to settle their dispute diplomatically, the court said. South Korea's foreign ministry said it would not make comments on Wednesday's ruling before examining the details. The ministry urged Japan to act in line with its past statements, including a 1993 statement in which it first admitted forcing women into sexual slavery. The 20 claimants in the case include four women who were forced to work as sex slaves during World War II and relatives of other women who have since died. One of the claimants is 92-year-old Lee Young-soo. She has been campaigning for South Korea and Japan to settle the sexual slavery issue by seeking a judgment from the UN's International Court of Justice. She says it has become clear the issue cannot be settled through talks or rulings by South Korean courts that have been repeatedly rejected by the Japanese government. She adds that the tension between the governments has hurt friendships between citizens. Regardless of the verdict, we will go to the International Court of Justice, she told reporters after Wednesday's ruling. Tens of thousands of women across Japanese-occupied Asia and the Pacific were forcibly moved to areas used by the Japanese military during World War II. About 240 South Korean women registered with the government as victims of sexual slavery by Japan's wartime military. Only 15 of them are still alive. The human rights group Amnesty International criticized Wednesday's ruling. In a statement, the group said the court failed to provide justice to the remaining survivors of this military slavery system and to those who suffered these atrocities before and during World War II. South Korea and Japan have also argued over South Korean court rulings that called for Japanese companies to pay Koreans forced to work in Japanese factories during World War II.
President Vladimir Putin warned Western governments Wednesday not to cross the red line in respect to Russia's security interests. The warning came during Putin's yearly State of the Nation address. He directed strong words at critics who are concerned about Russia's recent buildup of troops along its border with Ukraine. The United States and its allies have urged Russia to pull the troops back. In recent weeks, tensions between Russia and Ukraine have increased as both countries violated ceasefire agreements. While saying he did not want to burn bridges in the international community, Putin did say he would defend his country's interests. He said Russia's answer to outside threats would be quick and tough. He did not define where the red line would be on a number of issues, but said, "We will determine where it is in each case." Putin said no foreign country should be able to tell Russia what it can do on its own land, and that includes increasing the number of soldiers on its border with Ukraine. Without naming a specific country, he also criticized unlawful, politically motivated economic sanctions against Russia. He was speaking about economic restrictions placed last week on Russia by U.S. President Joe Biden's administration. The action came after U.S. officials accused Russia of attempting to influence the 2020 election and hacking into U.S. computer systems. The U.S. also sent 10 Russian diplomats home, investigated a number of Russian companies, and restricted the country's ability to borrow money. Putin has denied the U.S. accusations. In response, Russia put its own penalties on the U.S., including sending 10 diplomats home and restricting the way the U.S. embassy can operate in Russia. In his speech, Putin also said he would direct his country to continue to modernize its military. That includes buying and developing missiles and weapons. He said work continues on an underwater unmanned vehicle that can carry nuclear weapons and also a nuclear-powered missile. He asked other nations to recognize that Russia has its own interests and will always find a way to defend its position. He warned other countries not to use selfish and arrogant language when speaking about Russia. Putin questioned why Western governments were quick to criticize Russia, but did not speak out against a failed attempt to assassinate Alexander Lukashenko, a Russian ally and the president of Belarus. He condemned political interference by foreign governments in other countries as well, saying, "It goes over the top and crosses all boundaries." While Putin targeted his critics, he also praised his country's progress in the last year. He noted Russia's fast development of vaccines against COVID-19 and put forward economic plans aimed at helping the country recover from the pandemic. He urged more Russians to get vaccinated so the country could reach herd immunity faster. As Putin spoke, protests supporting imprisoned opposition leader Alexei Navalny happened in Moscow and across Russia's Far East. Police arrested several of Navalny's supporters in Moscow, and many other protesters were detained across Russia. I'm Dan Friedel.
Apple has announced a new iPad equipped with the same chip technology used in Mac computers. The company also released a line of new iMac computers and launched a small tracking device for important personal objects. The new products were announced during an online launch event Tuesday. The new iPad Pro contains Apple's M1 chip, which the company claims increases the tablet computer's processing speed by 50%. It is the first time Apple has put its M1 chip inside an iPad. Apple announced last year that it had decided to replace Intel-based chips in all its Macs with its own version. The new iPad Pros also contain additional ports for connecting larger monitors and were built with improved video quality. Apple said the devices also have better keyboard systems that work more like most laptop computers. They also offer connectivity to 5G, the next generation of wireless technology. Apple's move to release more powerful iPads is seen as a way to meet rising demand as more people work from home during the coronavirus pandemic. The new iPad's lowest-priced version costs $799 and will be available for online orders on April 30th. Another one of the company's new products is called AirTag. It is a small device that can be attached to objects that people commonly carry, such as keys or money holders. If lost, the object attached to an AirTag can be tracked with a user's iPhone. The AirTag system uses the company's existing Find My technology to help users find Apple devices or Macs that get lost. The system uses Bluetooth technology when the lost device is nearby and Apple's Find My network. During the launch event, Apple showed that a person with AirTags can use their iPhone to be guided with step-by-step directions to the lost device. The phone uses its camera and other directional equipment to guide the user. Apple says currently only iPhone 11 and 12 users will be able to use this service. In a statement about the AirTags, Apple said the system was designed from the ground up to keep location data private and secure. It said no data or location history is physically stored inside AirTag. Any communication involving the Find My network is also encrypted so that only the owner of the device sees the location data. In addition, the company said it built in tools aimed at preventing people from being tracked with AirTag unknowingly. For example, AirTag devices that become separated from owners for longer periods of time play a sound when moved to draw attention. Apple says its devices can also identify an AirTag that is not with its owner and can inform users if an unknown AirTag is seen traveling with them from place to place. AirTags will cost $29 each, or four for $99, and will be available for order April 23rd. Apple also announced the launch of a line of new, thinner iMacs, which are also equipped with the M1 chip. The computers are designed to be used on a desktop. They have better cameras and speakers for improved video meetings. They also have improved video quality and include keyboards with the same fingerprint identification sensor that unlocks iPhones. The iMacs, which come in several bright colors, have a starting price of $1,299 and are expected to be available in May. Apple also announced a new podcast subscription service aimed to compete with other podcast companies such as Spotify. I'm Brian Lynn.
Woodrow Wilson, America's 28th president, established the National Park Service in 1916 to protect the wild and wonderful landscapes in the United States. But it is an earlier leader who is considered the father of America's national parks. In 1906, Theodore Roosevelt, America's 26th president, signed the American Antiquities Act. The law permitted him and future presidents to take immediate action to protect important cultural or natural resources. The Antiquities Act led to the creation of many of the 413 sites within the National Park Service today.
No president has played a bigger role in protecting the country's natural and cultural resources than Theodore Roosevelt. During his time in office, he established 5 new national parks and 18 national monuments. In all, he protected over 93 million hectares of public land. He became known as the conservationist president. Roosevelt's concern for the land and environment came from the time he spent in the Dakota Territory, beginning in the 1880s. The area where he traveled is now the state of North Dakota. Today, you will find a national park there named in his honor. The park protects badlands, wildlife, scenic views, as well as 2 ranches where Roosevelt himself once lived. Welcome to Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Theodore Roosevelt came to Dakota Territory in September 1883. He was a young married man from New York, where his political career was just beginning. He came to Dakota in hopes of hunting huge animals called bison. He also had a great interest in the Western frontier lifestyle. Roosevelt soon developed an interest in raising cattle. Cattle ranching in Dakota was a big business in the 1880s. Cattle fed on the land's healthful grasses. He and a partner entered the business. Roosevelt invested $14,000 to build the Maltese Cross Ranch. Roosevelt returned to New York while workers constructed the ranch. He resumed his political duties in Albany, the state capital. But in early 1884, he experienced 2 great personal losses. His mother and wife died of illnesses on the same day, February 14th. Roosevelt described the pain and loss in his diary with only one sentence: "The light has gone out of my life."
Roosevelt again headed west in the summer of 1884. He sought to escape the reminders of his recent losses. He arrived at his newly built Maltese Cross Ranch. He also decided to build a second ranch in a quieter, more remote area. He called that ranch Elkhorn. Roosevelt traveled between New York and Dakota, working both as a state lawmaker and a cattle rancher. In late 1884, he helped form an organization in Dakota to help protect ranchers' rights. In 1885, Roosevelt published his first book about his experiences as a rancher and hunter. In it, he predicted that the cattle industry of the Dakota Badlands was not sustainable. In other words, it would not last. Roosevelt was right. Severe weather struck the area in 1886 and 1887. In the winter, a terrible freeze killed many cattle. The animals that survived the cold soon starved. Roosevelt himself lost over half of his cattle. He decided to get out of the business. The experience, however, shaped Roosevelt's beliefs about the need for conservation in America. Those beliefs, in turn, helped shape his policies as president.
Visitors to Theodore Roosevelt National Park can experience the Badlands just as Roosevelt did hundreds of years ago. They can also visit the Maltese Cross Cabin, as well as the Elkhorn Ranch area. The park has three main areas: the South Unit, the North Unit, and the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. In the South Unit, visitors can drive along the Scenic Loop Road. It offers many places to see wildlife and the surrounding Badlands. Badlands are very dry places with little vegetation. Wind and water shape Badlands mainly through erosion. The process leaves behind high, flat-topped hills of clay and other soft rock. Many visitors stop to look at Painted Canyon. It gets its name from the colorful exposed rocks there. Trails near the canyon offer visitors a chance to see animals, from the huge American bison to small black-tailed prairie dogs. These animals are not really dogs, they are rodents. Roosevelt described prairie dogs as the most noisy and inquisitive animals imaginable.
The North Unit also offers several hiking trails. Some paths are short and easy. Others may take 2 days to complete. The Achenbach Trail is a 28-kilometer-long path. It crosses the Little Missouri River and takes visitors into the heart of the Theodore Roosevelt Wilderness. The third area of the park is the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. This is what Roosevelt described as his home ranch. He wrote of the ranch in this way: "My home ranch house stands on the river brink. From the low, long veranda, shaded by leafy cottonwoods, one looks across sandbars and shallows to a strip of meadowland, behind which rises a line of sheer cliffs and grassy plateaus."
Today, the Elkhorn Cabin itself no longer stands. Visitors will find only stone rocks where the cabin once was. The area that surrounds Elkhorn, however, is among the most beautiful, wild, and quiet places in the Badlands of North Dakota. It is this peace and beauty that appealed to Roosevelt after the deaths of his mother and wife. But the Dakota Badlands did more than just help Roosevelt overcome his pain. They helped shape the kind of president he would later become. In the words of Roosevelt himself, "I would not have been president had it not been for my experience in North Dakota." I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.